So, welcome on a session regarding the memory analysis. First of all, let me tell you what the session is going to be about. That's the first thing. Second, who am I? What am I doing in front of you? Why we are talking about such a strange things like memory analysis? And basically, what's the background of the session? Why it was created? And why hopefully you will find a couple of techniques interesting. So first of all, again, welcome. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz. And what I'm doing for a living, I'm a penetration tester. So technically working purely within the security industry. And I'm working in the security industry for 12 years right now for the company that is called Secure. This is the company that I've established. Currently, we have offices in New York, Dubai, and of course, Warsaw, and that's the place that I'm from. Still, the team is very small because it's just 8 people, but everybody is security-minded, including like even our developer that is writing different tools that I'm going to show you today. And also my background for this kind of doing the deep dives into security world is related to the fact that I and a couple of other guys from the team, we do have access to a source code of Windows. And legally given by Microsoft, we are not stealing anything. And this is something that allows us to do a little bit deeper research if it's about security, things happening in operating system. I'm not a developer, by the way, so don't expect any kind of developer-related things in this session. But I am the person that, as I said, has something to do with security, also playing a lot with Windows internals. So that's technically my passion. And I would like to share with you a small part of passion today regarding the Windows memory analysis. And regarding the session itself, of course, there were two motivating things that actually made me to write this session. First was that we were participating in a project that was, well, pretty interesting because it was related to someone that was, well, actually, this was in Germany, which was pretty interesting. One of the locations of the company was in the Germany, and it appeared that one of the administrators was sabotaging a company, made the company to lose about 5 million euros. So that was a really interesting project that we were engaged in, and someone really got angry, like, we just should stop losing money, and we should like invite someone to do the whole investigation about why, what kind of things are going on, and why this is happening, and so on, and who is this doing, and so on. So it was a pretty interesting and sad project. Of course, at the end, we could be just coming into some conclusions, but one of the things that helped us out to find out that this is this guy doing this, not this guy, for example, was that we found in the apparently the person that was doing this in the memory, the different kinds of log entries that he deleted, but whatever works or whatever worked is in the memory. And because after deleting a couple of things, he did not reboot his computer, we were able to extract that tiny piece of information. It actually took a while, but this was the first motivation that we got. The second motivation was actually a little bit more simpler. And this is actually, let me share with you a tiny story. The story is as follows. My friend, he's just a nice guy in IT industry. He was searching for the girlfriend. I mean, you can laugh and so on, but he was really attending this kind of, you know, online dating type of websites. Just a quick question, who is attending this kind of website? No, okay, you don't have to answer. Ah, you there. Okay. So basically, the thing is that he, of course, scheduled a date with the girl, and he didn't tell me about it. I mean, why should he? And he went for the meeting, and the standard thing happened. Of course, the girl was completely not how he saw in the picture, and the girl was a little bit older, a little bit not nice, not that nice as she was on the picture, and so on. So he was like really disappointed, and I'm like, man, just do a better research. Like, schedule some Skype call or something like that. Talk to this girl first before you spend your time going on a date, right? I mean, as simple as this. If she's serious about you, she's gonna make a Skype call, simple. And he's like, okay, that makes sense. So what he did, he scheduled a Skype call. And he had, of course, this nice girl sitting in front of him, and they were having a chat, and they came into the conclusion that, yeah, it's the time to have a serious date. And he went physically dated her on the date, and what appeared that the girl is still not as he saw on the Skype video. Because as it appeared before, and that is like really sad, this was on the Skype, this was this girl's sister, not the girl herself. Yes? And I was like, man, this is just not fair. What we should do about it, and this is very much related to the memory, always in the memory, deeper research never hurts. And this is a simple conclusion. Because in memory analysis, what we are thinking always about is that, okay, like, I see all these processes, I see all that stuff inside, now what? Deeper research never hurts. And this is like always the sentence that we should apply to memory analysis, because in memory we can find so many different things that one message and one information always guides the other one. So it's always like that. So you can spend on one dump a couple of hours or even days or even sometimes week trying to extract some portions of information that you are interested in, and eventually at the end maybe you will find that you were looking for, what you were looking for. So this is the simple conclusion. I will tell you, of course, what's the end of the story at the end of the session. Not positive. Anyway. Could it be worse? Yes, it can. Anyway, this is the agenda for our session. Yes, so we've got dumping techniques, memory dump analysis. We're going to do the live memory analysis as well on the dump and on the live memory of the operating system. And then we're going to do the summary. If you've ever been on my sessions, probably you know that I do have a lot of demonstrations, like live demos and so on. So forgive me, I will be not walking around. I'll be just standing in front of my laptop showing you things because we do have a lot of things to do. And I think it's a good idea to start from the tools. Because every time, and again, you are never leaving my sessions with empty hands. If you are like about to do the same type of analysis that I'm doing with the memory tools that I'm using, you can always check out the tools. And don't get me wrong, I'm very bad at marketing. I'm really bad at marketing. So if you just go to our website and just to go immediately to the tile that is called tools, you're going to just find the link over there that is called tools. And then you just need to go, of course, and download the tools. Of course, if you ask me, because I'm very often at my work at the bad side, not on the good side, yes? If you ask me, are the tools safe? I would say, of course, it's up to you if you're going to run them or not. Just a small warning, I like raccoons a lot. Raccoon is this kind of tiny animal that maybe you saw on my background. It looks like this. This is my wallpaper. And if you see the tool with the icon like that, do not run it in a production environment, and I'm really serious about it, because it will hurt your infrastructure, and it's not a matter of question. It will. Yes, something bad's going to happen. And the question is what? Well, that depends on the tool that you're going to run, yes? But do not run it in the production environment. I really don't want to be responsible for that, yes? Okay, guys. So first of all, let's start from the simple demonstration before we jump to the subject, even before that. And that particular simple demonstration is going to be related with hiding a certain process. And I would like to first show you first how to hide the process, and then I would like to show you, of course, how to discover a certain process. What we're going to do, I'm going to use the debugger, Windows debugger underneath. The details are not that important, because what I will do, I'm going to actually hide the process using the DCOM technique. It's called direct kernel object modification. And then let's dig in and let's see, of course, how we are able to find this process later. So this is basically the process that I'm going to hide. It's called malware.exe, as we see, right? So this is this body. And very, very quickly, not digging into C++ stuff, because I'm not that cruel. But what we're going to do, we're going to use debugging tools for Windows. So let me, of course, show you. So this is basically that, debugging tools for Windows. And I'm going to break into the virtual machine. And I'm going to use the script that I've got to basically load and hide that particular process. Just a few words, of course, about the whole concept. Yes, how does it work? What kind of stuff we've got within the debugger? First of all, I'm going to do .cmd3, and that here I'm going to put the lab.txt file, txt file. And within such, well, this lab.txt file, first of all, one more thing, clab.txt, lab.txt file. What I'm going to do, that's going to be actually, well, I'm going to load the file. Oh, what's that? Let me see. Oh, sorry, sorry, my mistake. Labs, of course. Click. Great. So over here, I got, well, some commands. These are the debugger commands. Are they important in the context of this session? Completely not. Yes, I just want to show you the result. So if you are interested in the file itself, you can download it from the tools website, yes? So just a few words. First of all, what I'm going to do, I'm going to find the process that I'm actually searching for. So this is the machine that is connected remotely to the virtual machine. So I got a debugger that is debugging the virtual machine, yes? How to set them up together? Oh, very simply, bcd edit. And over there in the boot editor, you've got the option that is called debug. Have a look. Yes, just note it down, and this is how you are able to debug the virtual machine. It's very good because this is if you are like want to practice rootkits or whatever, this is actually the fantastic place to be in. You are directly in the kernel right now. So I will be doing the direct kernel object modification. Yes. If you've got some questions, of course, don't hesitate. Yes. Exclamation mark process gives me the possibility, 00, to search for the process ID and search for the process itself, where is it in the memory. So this is the very basic command always that we are using within the debugger. Very, very basic, yes? If you are starting your adventure with the debugger, you have to know it. And process 00, the 00, this first 0 stands for display me all of the processes in operating system. And second 0 is the flag saying display me only the basic information about the process itself. I will show you, of course, how it works in a second. And then malware.exe, because this is what I'm searching for. So right now in the memory, yeah, perfect. We've got this long thing over here. This long over here, it is the address in the memory of this process in the, how many bits? 64 or 32 operating system? 64. The long one like that, it's of course 64. The half of it is going to be the 32-bit operating system. Luckily that we don't have the 128-bit operating system, because then we will need to use this kind of long memory addresses. We don't need it right now, at least for now. Anyway, so this buddy, I'm going to copy it, and I'm going to move to inside of the process. So dot process, process, and then I'm going to paste the address, enter, very good. And right now, I'm inside the process that's called malware.exe. And from the beginning of the process, because we are always jumping to the beginning, I'm able to modify things that is called active process links. So this is actually kind of like childhood, like in a kindergarten related mechanism in Windows that allows you to list the processes in the operating system. So technically, if I do start, let me begin, task manager like this. Yeah, so I got some, whatever, processes, details. So we should be really grateful to Microsoft. I know it sounds really weird, but we should be really grateful that when you just do right click and task manager, you got your processes just like that. Yay, thank you. It's actually a pretty good thing because we've got two options. One option is to ask active process links mechanism, hey, give me the information who is today at school. And another one is to ask the memory manager, could you please be so nice and do the full, the 16 gigabytes of memory scanning and tell me exactly which processes are today at work? Yes? So there is a difference, of course. Like, imagine scanning for the certain process-related information, 16 gigabytes of memory, or even more, yes? Versus, you've got this fantastic task manager. I'm, of course, a little bit ironic right now, but still. You've got this fantastic task manager. You do, like, think, and then you get the processes. Thank you. Can we cheat on this quick thing, then? Of course. It's just a list, like in the kindergarten. If the kids are going like, na, 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 and they are like rubbing each other's hands, yes? If you got like, whatever, John and Katie, and in middle you've got Anna, and if you take Anna out, And if you take John's and Katie's hands and you're gonna like together, yes, Anna's gonna be like, I'm not on the list. So it's gonna be pretty much similar like we're gonna do in operating system right now. So how does it work? Let me, of course, work on it. So first of all, whenever we are already in the middle of the process, now it's just a matter to set up the variables properly. Yeah? So we've got this T1, T0, yes, thing. So it's to Anna and to John, because we are, to Katie and to John, because we are right now in the middle of Anna. Yes, so we're like, Anna, who you are talking to? And Anna's gonna be like, to John, to Katie, yes? So we need to define it. And from which perspective that is? From Anna's perspective. So that's why we need to set it up right now. So variable number one and variable number two. And now, of course, we need to calculate the distance. The reason why I'm doing this is because it's necessary to overwrite memory of the certain processes, yes? So we're gonna be doing this live. We're gonna change the process settings in the memory. So this is the first thing, and this is the distance. So how far is Anna and Katie at the same time? John and Katie at the same time. Okay, and now we're gonna display the names of these guys. So this is the previous and next processes. Ah, okay. So I got Postgres running in this machine, and I got CMD running in this machine. You know what's funny? Is that this list is literally like when the, let's say, Christopher comes in and my hand is empty, but if this one is already taken, I'm gonna have it taken with Chris. And Chris' hand is like this. So he comes, for example, Sophie, and she comes in and she takes the Chris' hand. So it's like literally, like in the kindergarten, yes? So when you break this mechanism, of course, I mean, it's really hard to rely on it because the mechanism relies on it on itself, right? It's just a list. That's why we call it active process links. And these links are these hands. And it's very easy to cheat on it. Very easy. This is how malware hides. But of course, my purpose is not to show you how it hides, but how to find it. So let's dig in. So these are the names of the other guys, yes? Okay, good. So the next thing that we will do, we will, whenever, of course, we do have everything defined, it's time to hide, of course, and make this hand exchange. So it looks really like strange, like previous is flink, next blinks, previous. Oh my gosh. So forward, backward. If Anna is in the middle, someone is forward, someone is backward. Forward is the one that came later. Backward is the one that came before Anna to the kindergarten, yes? As simple as this. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna take this guy's hand and attach it to this guy's hand. Yes, and we're gonna do this the other side because everybody is like, this one is pointing to this, this one is pointing to this. So we need to do this twice. Okay, let's do that. So click and click. And this go, I will not click in front of your eyes, but in front of my eyes. And the reason why it's like this is because you see this malware.exe, this blue line, yes? It's selected because I marked it by purpose. Before we do that, it would be lovely if you could remember the process ID. 2032, remember? Good. So now I'm gonna press G for go and watch the blue line. Gone. Yes? So hiding, it's a kind of cheap saying, isn't it? Because we did something concrete. And by the way, what I did is the only possible way how we are able to hide the process in operating system. We don't have any other ways. So if someone right now says, this process is hidden, it's not. I mean, linguistically, we could say it like that. But do we know how we'll find it? And answer is yes. It's going to be somewhere in a memory. Yes? The question is who to ask. And there are two mechanisms that we can, of course, use for that. One mechanism is going to be actually pretty easy because that's going to be the, in this particular case, let me run it, Process Explorer by Mark Rusinovich, says internals. Why not? Yes? Any other tool that we could use could be perfect for that particular solution. And basically, we've got here different kinds of processes. And what we're gonna actually pick over here, it's the client-server runtime subsystem. So we've got these two bodies over here. And some of these guys has actually information about the certain well handle to process manager that's going to point to the process that we are searching for. It sounds like, yeah, but let's begin, yes? So basically, first of all, let's go to the first client server runtime subsystem. And over here, we do see different kinds of handles in a bottom window, yes? So we can, of course, search for the different kinds of things, and we can search for the different kinds of processes, if we can, of course, find the, if we can find the details or not, So client server runtime subsystem, very good, and let's dig in into the whole scenario. So what is pretty interesting, actually, whenever we are thinking about searching this kind of processes, we can enlarge it, is that every time, of course, you got a handle to the certain process, here you've got, well, the process handle mentioned, and then you've got the process ID mentioned, yes? So now, and unfortunately, and I'm sorry for that, we need to basically dig in and search for something that looks strange. And the question is, what does it mean that something looks strange? Well, we will see that if it looks strange, yes? So anything strange over here? Not really, everything looks good, yes? It might be that we will not find it in this process. Might be like that. But not really, yes? Let's dig in. And let's see, of course, if we can find the appropriate information. So let's dig in. And here, still nothing really interesting. I'm sorry, that takes time. I will show you even more time-consuming things. And now we are done, yes? Because we could not find anything in this client server runtime system, so we need to go to the other one and search for the same type of information in the other area. Oh, I see something interesting. And probably you do too. You see that? Isn't it funny? I mean, non-existent process, but you've got a process ID. It's like, nobody can see me. Yes, a little bit like that. So basically, is this normal that we will see things like that in the operating system? Absolutely not. Yes, this is how malware will hide itself. And nowadays, well, obviously, we do have a custom code written all the time. Yes, and none of your antivirus needs to even scream. Yes, one of the semantic management guys in June this year, they said that antivirus is dead. I'm not saying it, it's a quote, yes? Antivirus is dead. And everybody was like, oh, no, oh no, what's gonna happen to our dollars, yes? Well, obviously, of course, antivirus is useful still, I'm not saying not, but like kids that have like 13, 14 years old, they are writing their own custom code, right? So how the time's gonna evolve when they're gonna be like even more mature, when they're gonna feel the need for money and so on. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. And that all the tools that we are using, for example, for the pen test, I mean, we write them, so technically none of the antiviruses discovers them. So the same is, for example, with, I'm sure you know, if not that I will be showing also, the tool that Benjamin Delpy wrote, which is called Mimikatz, to extract the passwords from the memory. And everybody is like using this tool within the pen test. Well, that's great. And we could say like, yeah, but Mimikatz can be discovered by antivirus. No, because you can compile right now your own version of Mimikatz. And who's going to say that you are using Mimikatz, yes? Let me dig in. Of course, I'm going to show you everything. So this is basically that. That kind of hiding things, it a little bit reminds me this, yes? So I'm sure you know the picture, yes? It's a little bit like with kids. It's pretty much the same, yes? Like, oh, mommy, find me, yes? Well, obviously, I see you. Like, where are you? I don't see you. Yeah, non-existent process. Pretty much the same story, right? So what is the answer? Answer is very simple. Whatever works is always in the memory, and we're able easily to find it. Of course, I said at the very beginning that it's very nice to find things in the memory. I did it in a kind of tricky way because I went to the client server runtime subsystem. This is the basically one of the client server runtime subsystem functions. It's to manage processes in operating system. And every process that is in operating system needs to come into the client server runtime system and register himself. If this not happens, process cannot be a legit process. And we cannot have not legit process in operating system. Process is always a legit process. Either it's visible or not, yes? So this is the concept. And that's why I use this geeky thing, like, why do clients server run time subsystem? Because we know that this guy is managing processes, and if he is managing the processes, for sure there is going to be a handle from client server runtime subsystem to this process because he needs to manage it. As simple as this. Yes? So the next thing is to make the memory dump and to scan the memory dump, of course, searching for the processes. So I'd made a memory dump. How are we going to get there? This is just an introduction. And that particular memory dump, as you see, I'm using here the tool that is called Volatility. And Volatility, well, now you're probably like, oh no, not again, Python. To configure Python in Windows with all of the additional modules and so on, please, please, don't let me reinstall my operating system, yes? Because it's so many things that we need to add if you want to do a little bit more of analysis. But if you want to use the basic Volatility, because that's the name of the tool, just go ahead and use it. And this is always my good recommendation regarding the memory analysis. Like, oh, this is so difficult. Completely not. Make a memory dump, download Volatility. You're ready to go. Yes? And of course, install Python. Small tip, don't, but that's just my experience. Don't install the 64-bit Python. And the reason why I'm saying this is because less modules are working with the 64-bit Python. More it's for 32-bit. That's the only recommendation. You're going to get more benefits. But Volatility, it's a free tool. Yes, it's a Python script. Download Python and make a memory dump. And then we're ready to go. So now, what I did before the session, I made a memory dump of this machine that we've been analyzing with this malware.exe. And now I would like to show you how to do the small analysis and search for this process, if it's possible to grab it out from the memory or not. Yes, because it's hiding. So let's have a look. First of all, it's a command itself. vol.py, so it's Volatility. I'm specifying the file. Then I'm going to profile. So this is the profile of the machine. By the way, what is really funny is that regardless if it's Windows 7, Windows 8, you use the Windows 7 profile. Welcome to the Python world. Because Windows 8 module, Windows 8 profile, it's still written. You know, so give it a time. Developers sometimes need time, you know? So I'm using this one, yes? And then I'm listing the processes with pslist. So pslist command, it's actually very easy. It works like chop, chop, chop. And what it does, it gives us the list of the processes in the operating system. So the question is it possible somehow, can we list here on the list malware.exe? Let's see, I got Emmet. That did not prevent us from this. But that's it. So where is malware.exe? Not visible. Because pslist does the same mistake as task manager. It asks the wrong guy. Yes? So basically, what we need to do, and I did it before session because it really takes time, you need to do the ps scan. Let me enlarge it. Ps scan. And option ps scan, so this one, it's exactly the same command like we've got, but with the ps scan at the end. What I've got over here, and let's see if we can find malware.exe. So let's find it out. Do we see malware.exe somewhere? Yes. OK. So very good. So having this in mind, of course, over here if you're still searching for it. It has a different process ID because it was pre-boot. Yes, so that's why it's a different one. So different searches types. This one takes time because we need to go through all of the memory that you've got and ask everybody, like, excuse me, are you a process? Oh, you look like one. OK, you are on the list, yes? So it's a little bit that kind of approach. If you are an employee of the organization and you step into the building, but you forgot to do the beep, yes? Are you at work or not? Well, technically, you are, yes? But how these guys over there, security guys, can check that you are in the building or not? Well, they need to go to every room, open the door, and is Smith over there? Yes? No, is Smith over there? And half an hour later, because this is how long it takes, yes? Yes, Smith is over there, it's over here. Okay, so I'm putting you on the list, yes? So it's this kind of approach. Okay, guys, so this everything is cool, but the question is, why do we need these dumps? Why do we need memory dumps? Well, the purpose is very simple. We use memory dumps to search for the different kinds of information. Like if you are like doing the investigation, then one of the things that is the most important things after attack is actually to make a memory dump. But please don't do this obviously on the same disk, but do this somewhere else, on the external disk, yes? Just saying. Because if you do have like 16 gigabytes of memory, 32, then it's gonna overwrite all the space that might be nice for the further investigation, but we've already overwrote it, yes? So we don't want that. So the next thing, of course, from the dump perspective, you can, for example, search for the problems within the applications. Very often we've got like questions like, oh, could you please help us with this application because worker process, so w3wp.exe, it gets like to 8 gigabytes of memory, but we completely don't know why this is so much, yes? Okay, let's make a memory dump, but let's see what's happening, yes? So as simple as this. So whenever, for example, your application has things like memory leak and is growing in a virtual memory, if you do the memory dump, you are able to clearly evaluate as a developer what is happening inside. From the IT pro, it's very important to be able to make these dumps so that you are able to deliver this to developer, so that he is able, of course, to solve the problem to you. It's very actually comfortable what I'm saying right now, because usually you've got this developers and IT pros relationship that is not always perfect. And basically, you've got this fantastic application, yes? IT spend a lot of money. It's actually the case of our last customer. They spend a lot of money on a fantastic server, yes? And this application still takes memory. Surprise, surprise, yes? So what to do? Well, developer says we did a good job, yes? And IT is like, we also did a good job. We've got a pretty good server that we gave you, yes? Give us the money back, whatever, yes? So make a dump, and then we are able, of course, to talk more. So how to do that? Let's dig in. First of all, if we are about making the memory dumps, well, we can keep it easy. We can make and use the Process Explorer or Task Manager as easy as this, yes? Have a look. Like, I'll just do this for cmd.exe, yes? And then basically, you've got here a bunch of options available, and then you were able to do the dump, yes? So we can have it like that. This particular create dump file that I have right now selected, this is the option that gives you, one more thing, sorry. Yeah, here we go. Oh, sorry. Ooh, what was that? Yeah, it's because it's a task manager, sorry. Yes, it's sometimes like this. Okay, so let's do it one more time. So you are able, of course, to make a dump like I'm showing. So here we go. So anything, of course, create a dump file, and then it gives you information about where you were able to create, of course, the certain, where you were able to collect this dump, yes? So this is as simple as this. I know that what I'm showing is very basic right now, but let's dig in further. So this is how you are able to make the dump of the process. It's not obviously the dump of the operating system. What about different kinds of tools like Process Hacker, Process Explorer? Very much the same story. What about the tools like ProtsDump? Because this is pretty interesting. Well, in case of ProtsDump, it's actually the tool that is written by Andrew Richards. He's from Microsoft. I think that if someone could say that, yes, you got a cool job, I will say it to Andrew. Because Andrew completely does what he likes. He likes debugging. Like what for? No, he just likes the debugging. He does all the debugging and so on, and he writes cool tools. Fantastic. So basically, ProtsDump is one of his tools. It's a free tool that you can download from sysinternals.com, of course, and it's not by Mark Rusinovich, but by Andrew. And what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna run the application that hopefully will not kill my laptop right now. This is the application written by our developer. You can laugh right now, by the way, because the interface of this application is very, very poor. But the application is quite vicious. If you would like to do someone a bad joke, like give this app to someone, you can download it from my website, and say like, could you please press this button over here? Yes? And there's gonna be, okay, so now what is happening? Wait a second. This application does memory leak, yes? And that's not quite positive, I would say. And particularly, what is a memory leak? Well, we've got a couple of types of memory leaks, but in this particular case, this particular application just allocates a lot of virtual memory. So sooner or later, it's going to kill your operating system, rather later than sooner. That's why it's this kind of silent killer. Yes, if you set it up as a scheduled task to someone, that is just perfect. I haven't said anything, right? Okay. It's like, I don't know what to do. My computer is so slow. Well, I don't know as well. Maybe you should talk to your administrator. Okay, so what I'm going to do. I'm opening right now the Process Explorer. And in Process Explorer, I'm going to find, of course, Leaky App. And let me show you, of course, the whole setup. And I'm going to go to this here, as you see, this performance area. Let me actually map it nicely so that you can see everything clearly. Performance area. And in this performance area, we've got the virtual size. An application already, even if it allocated 9 megabytes of the memory, it allocated already 181 megabytes of the virtual memory. So as simple as this, the question is how we are able to catch the application whenever the application is doing memory leak. And how do we even know that? Well, first of all, it grows on virtual bytes. That's the first thing. It will be not that clear in a regular life as you're going to see it right now in the presentation. It's going to be slower, yes? With days, weeks, and so on. In my case, I'm going to show you fast. So it's a badly written application by purpose. But before I'm going to do that, I would like to capture the moment when application is leaking. So I'm going to capture this application on 400 megabytes, as you see. And I'm going to, of course, do the prots dump with the minus P option. And this minus P option gives me the possibility to define the counter like this. So this is the name of the process, and this is process ID. So the name of the counter, virtual bytes. And if this counter reaches 400 megabytes, then make me a dump. So this is very useful whenever you feel that something is going wrong with your application. And you don't want to wait to a certain moment. You want to catch or you want to catch some moment. Or when the application is crashing, the same story. You can do minus T, which is termination. And before the application crashes, you make a dump. And you know why it crashed. Very good. And the prots dump is waiting for this application to crash. Like whatever, for the next 2 days, good. But when it crashes, you have it. And then you are like, developers are, no, our application is not crashing. And you are like, yes, it's crashing. Show us. And you're like, now we are able to. And you're going to be like, OK, no problem. This is the dump for you to analyze. At the end, we care about the continuity, right? So let's start, yes? So basically, right now, I started the monitoring. I'm going to do the memory leak. And what you're going to see over here is that virtual bytes here, they are growing. So if you cannot see in details, it's 214 right now. And since I learned it for the last time, it's 263 and so on. It's a very badly written app, yes? It's leaking the memory. So in such case, that's why I'm saying, I mean, you don't want it on your computer. I will kill it in a moment because it's going to otherwise kill my computer. But what I want to show you is that when it reached 400 megabytes, we're waiting for 10 seconds, punk, and collecting more data, doing dump, goodbye. Yes? Let me kill this buddy. Good. So this particular dump, then, can be handled to developer. And developer can analyze, of course, why this application leaked, what happened, why this application crashed, whatever the reason you captured. So this is how we make dumps. Not just right-click and make a dump, which is also a good practice, but this one has at least some context. OK, guys. So having this in mind, let me take this out. And let me show you, of course, another tool. Another tool that I've got for you, it is actually a tool that it's not our tool, but the tool is written by my colleague. His name is Matthew Seuss. And unfortunately, the tool is not free. But the reason why I'm talking about it, is because this tool is just amazing. So over here, we've got, well, a couple of tools, obviously. One of the tools that is very important is Dumpit. I mean, if I could imagine the simpler tool in a world, that would not be possible. Really. This is the simplest tool ever. How to make a memory dump? Well, well, well. What you do, you just do right-click. Of course, UAC comes out. It asks you to run the mod you stole. It's signed. That means nothing, but okay. So here we've got the question, dumpit.exe, are you sure you want to continue, yes? And these are my details, yes? So if I click yes, what's going to happen? On my disk is going to be allocated 16 gigabytes dump file, yes? That contains all the stuff that I've got within the memory. And you know what is really cool? Our developer, his name is Michael, he is a very nice guy. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's fantastic. He's really fantastic. And he decided some time ago to help people. Okay. So what he does, he is a very active member of one of the forums, anti-malware forums. Like, he's like one of the top contributors. And he helps people to get rid of malware. Very good. And analyzes this malware and so on. This is his hobby. But what he does as well, and that's also his hobby, he collects memory dumps. Because, I mean, if someone is very desperate, like, oh no, I got a malware, Michael says, good, I'm going to help you, but give me the memory dump, yes? And he really needs that. Yes, not that he doesn't, he really needs that. So what do people do? Share it. What Michael has? Everybody's passwords. Financial details, yes? Whatever the document you had opened, they're over there. How to grab them? Let me show you. So just, of course, to sum up the first stage, this is how we are able to make this dump, yes? So when you click yes, you got just the full memory dump of the operating system done. And now it's time, of course, to do some analysis, okay? So let me take this out. I mean, if I click yes, the demo will be totally not breathtaking, so forgive me. It's just going to allocate 16 gigabytes on my disk. Wow. Yes? Okay, next. It's just a good tool. If you will be wondering, by the way, which tool and how should we make the memory dump of the operating system, dig in. How much is this? If you want to do the 64-bit Windows 8.1 and 8, it is $199, if I'm not mistaken, and the rest is for free. So if you want to start and have fun with the memory dumps, you can do this with the fantastic tool for free, as long as you are doing this on the 32-bit operating system or Windows 7. Yes, I think it's fair. So basically, this is the tool. Really, really good one. If you are hesitating, do not. Okie dokie. So the next thing that I've got to show you is actually the dump that I made before. And that particular dump, it's very, very simple, because this dump, it's called Demo Local Security Authority Subsystem. What I did, I went to Task Manager, just this, made a memory dump, right-click dump, and then I got a dump. But I did a dump of the very special process, Local Security Authority Subsystem. This is the boss. The boss is only one, and this boss knows a lot of things that he shouldn't probably sometimes, but the architecture of the operating system is like that, so that he knows. So what we're going to do, I'm going to open it in a debugger. So open 64, debugger opened. And in this particular case, I got a debugger to the DMP files attached. So right-click and then I just open it in a debugger. You could go to File, open Crash Dump, and do the same story. And over here, what I'm going to do, I'm going to use the and load one library. And that library, it's called, well, MimiLib. So I'm going to do dot load MimiLib. Dot load MimiLib. Enter. And what it opens is the Mimikatz, but in a little bit special version, yes, through the debugger. So this is really nice, because when you are wondering, like, should I open my tools on someone's server, answer is, not really. It's not very ethical, yes? Or for within the pen test, or if you want to be an ethical hacker or whatever, yes? In general, no. So should I open Mimikatz on my server? Try not to do such things, yes? But what you can do, though, is that you can make the dump of the Local Security Authority subsystem and take it to your own laptop and analyze it then. So basically, the simple story that actually brought me to this tiny thing is that I was doing the pen test in one of the customers, and there was this nice guy sitting next to me, and he was an administrator, a very, very nice guy. And he was describing me his architecture at the beginning, like a standard chit-chat, like, oh, tell me what you've got. And he's like, we've got this and that and this network and that network. Yeah, so boring. But anyway, this kind of chat, yes? And he was sitting over there for like, this meeting was like 2 hours. And I can go wrong, I mean, this is my job. But he was like, you know, Paula, I need to grab a cup of coffee. And I'm like, yeah, do whatever. And you know what he did? He stood up and he went out from the room. What is really cool, and I think it's more like a psycho thing, is that he didn't lock the desktop, yes? And that was wrong, obviously, because I'm the last person to trust within this relationship, yes? So I was like, really? And I asked him the question why he did not do it. And later on, he told me, like, you know, I know, this was so stupid. I'm like, yeah, stupid things cost, you know? But he was like, this is like so stupid because I didn't want to offend you. I'm like, what? And that kind of makes sense, I would say, because if someone is sitting like next to you, you will not do like Windows L to lock your desktop like in front of someone's eyes, like, hey, I'm locking the desktop in front of your eyes right now so that you don't steal stuff from my laptop. Not don't treat it personally, you know, but I just don't want you to, you know, dig into my laptop. It's a little bit like that, isn't it? So this mistake obviously costs, because what I did, I'm like, aha, that's my chance. Pen drive, click, task manager, right-click, made a memory dump of the local security authority subsystem, Control-C, Control-V to my pen drive out, none of the tools running, none of the antivirus screening, but I'm already in, yes? So what does it mean? So next thing within the analysis, exclamation mark, Mimi cuts, and then I'm grabbing and listing everything that is from the memory. Obviously, you will not find here this guy's password, because that would be not nice, but you'll find password of everybody, obviously, that is logged on. And why in a clear text? Well, because the authentication in Windows works like that. Local security authority subsystem stores your credentials, obviously, in the memory. It's a subject for another session, really, but it stores credentials in the memory so that next time you're gonna have some computers around, he will authenticate you nicely without prompting you, even if the user over there has the same username and password. That's why, by the way, having the same local administrator's password in the company on all of the workstations, it's a very bad thing. Very bad thing. Because if someone is a local admin, like a user somewhere, somehow, and that user gets attacked, this person is already in a whole infrastructure, because I'm like logging on smoothly without being prompted for the username and password, because local security authority subsystem will do this for me. Like, you just go on. So this is why basically password is in the memory, because, well, stuff works like that, yes? There is a bunch of improvements that Microsoft is introducing to this, of course. I will be completely not fair if I did not mention this. So expect some improvements because they are coming. And in Windows 10, this is supposed to be fixed. So this is of course, everything 8.1 to the bottom, yes? Okay. So just the tiny, tiny thing. Okay, guys. So let's move on further. What kind of other things we've got from the memory perspective? By the way, some questions? Not yet? Okay, so come afterwards and ask me, because you are sitting so silent. I believe that you might be like, oh, this is so boring, I can't wait to leave, or something like that. Hopefully not like that. So if you got questions, I will be waiting here for you, yes? Okay, so next thing that we've got, it's basically related with BitLocker, because this is always a catchy subject, yes? Like, what can I do if my machine is BitLockered? Well, bunch of things, yes? But not much if we manage it properly. Don't get me wrong, BitLocker is a great technology, but every encryption technology has one tiny characteristic, yes? One thing must be always unencrypted so that the rest of the things is encrypted. I mean, as logical as this. So in this particular case, it's going to be nothing but recovery password. And whenever you boot within the BitLocker, the recovery password is used by the driver, fvevol.sys, to get access to the drive and bring you data in the unencrypted form. I mean, it has to be like that, logically. So here comes the question. And don't get me wrong, I'm very not romantic person. And there I got a couple of life guiding sentences. One of the life guiding sentences is, whatever works, it's in a memory, and it's really my life guiding sentence. Because when you analyze operating system, you're like, of course, I mean, if someone touched something, and it's going to be either in the page file, either it's going to be in the memory. So the same story, it's with the 48-digit recovery password in the BitLocker. Let's dig in. So what I've got over here is the password recovery kit forensic. One of the tools, yes? One of the tools that do pretty much the same job as all of this kind of cool forensic tools and so on. Why this one? Just because. Because it's nice, yes? Because I like it. But there are many other also available. So what I'm going to do and what I did. First of all, there is this analyze memory and decrypt hard disk thing. So it sounds like a one-click thing, like hack me, yes, like this. Tool is really good. What it does, actually, well, maybe it's not that simple, but what I did one tiny thing. Through FireWire, because FireWire port has the direct memory access on all of this kind of PCI ports and so on, what I did, I made a memory dump. If you are managing the enterprise corporate laptops, make sure that if they are BitLockered, obviously, because if they're not, you don't need to bother, but if they are BitLockered, you need to make sure that the FireWire obviously is turned off. Because if the hacker comes in and there is a FireWire that is turned on, because of the direct memory access, you connect FireWire here, FireWire to your hacker's laptop, yes? And then you run, there are different kinds of tools available, like for example this one. Another one, this one is not free, the free one is very also nice, it's called Inception. You know Leonardo DiCaprio and that, yeah, okay. So this is exactly the same name of the tool. But it, unfortunately, if you type Inception in Google, what comes, oh, I'm sorry, we know where. What comes, you know, it's the language thing, you know, I'm sorry. Anyway, if you type Inception, only Leo comes out. So yes, so you need to type Inception memory, and then still Leo comes out, yes? So you need to type Inception memory free, and then it's going to come out, because obviously Leo will not do stuff for free. Anyway, so you do that, and then you are able to make the memory dump using the FireWire or any port that allows for the direct memory access. And if you do have this kind of machine, what else you can do? Obviously, you can do the disk dump. And disk dump can be made if you boot from this Windows image file that can be, for example, just a regular Windows installation file, Windows 8 installation ISO. Yes, you put it on the USB stick and then you reboot. And then you use the, for example, and that's what I did, Mark Rusinovich tool that is called disk to VHD. And it allows you to make an image of the drive in the encrypted form. So you've got a memory dump and you've got a disk. So now it's time to correlate. So what are we going to achieve thanks to that? Well, as simple as this. I got it, BitLocker, click. And there are also different kinds of other technologies. I get here, as we see, the VHD file. So this is the dump that I made. And I got also the memory dump that I made. OK, next. And then it takes a small moment, so we're going to be back to it. Because what it does, it searches for the 48-digit patterns in the memory to search for the recovery password that is working in the memory when your disk is a bit lockered. Of course, we need to read it all the time. So we need to provide some key to be able to grab the content from the disk. But where this key is going to be when it's working? Obviously in the memory. Yeah, so this is what we are talking about. Of course, the tool is kind of creepy. I call it Microsoft Time, because it shows you like it's like 1 minute, 1 second. But when it gets to the end and it says 0 second, suddenly it starts to increase. It's like, OK, whatever. I let it finish. I don't want to touch it. So this is basically the approach. So let it finish. We're going to be back to it. Next thing that I wanted to also talk about, it is actually a really interesting thing that we can grab from the memory. And that particular thing will be nothing but certificates. And we're going to grab one particular certificate. We can do this, obviously, remotely. The question is who we need to be to do that. Obviously, you need to be the administrator of this computer. So for example, if the hacker is leveraging the fact that you are using, hypothetically, there are many points of entry, many scenarios. You are using the same password for all of the local administrators in the workstations, yes? Then, for example, he is able to connect remotely to one of the computers and grab the certificates out. with the private keys, even if they were marked as not exportable. This is quite strange, yes? But on the other hand, when you've got this PFX in your hand, and you want to, for example, or you want to export the key, you've got imported the certificate, you want to export it, like, why some file like that tells me that this key cannot be exported? Like, the file is telling me, come on, I paid for this operating system. You know, this is my grandpa's approach, by the way, yes? I paid for it, I have to have it. So why not? Of course it's possible. So let's dig in. This is to show you 48-digit recovery password. Here we go, yes? By the way, I'm from Poland. Did I mention this? No. We've got sometimes bad fame in the different areas, but yeah, maybe that's why I'm evil sometimes. But anyway, this tiny thing, of course, is whenever you're gonna feel in the role of the hacker and you want to steal someone's laptop that is BitLockered, and if there is a firewire turned on, obviously, or any other PCI and so on, I mean, we are getting in very easily. That's what I'm saying. Okay, but BitLocker is good, don't get me wrong, it's really good. Okay, guys. So the next thing that I wanted to show you is regarding, of course, grabbing the certificates from the memory. And the question is, how can we do that? Well, first of all, what I'm going to use, and let me do the full screen, what I'm going to use for that particular demonstration, it is the Mimikatz, but written in the PowerShell. So if you were, of course, about to wonder, like, what does it mean to have the Mimikatz in the PowerShell, let me do that. Of course, over here, well, there are a couple of good news and bad news. Good news is that you can download Mimikatz in PowerShell from the internet. The bad news is that, of course, if you just run it like that, antivirus will not scream because it's just a PowerShell script. And also, the bad news is that if you really want to learn and see how it works, it is just over 2,700 lines of the script. So, bunch of, yes? But this is available from the internet. You can download it and you can test it. Okay, what are we going to do? We're going to, of course, do one thing. First of all, I'm going to invoke Mimikatz. I'm going to, of course, install the script first. And then I'm going to invoke Mimikatz. Invoke Mimikatz. Very good. No, not this one, this one. Invoke Mimikatz. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to, of course, specify where I would like to and what I would like to do, yes? And as you see, of course, there's a bunch of options that we've got. One of the first things that we've got, it is the computer name. So let's use that. And in my case, I'm going to use that against the machine that I'm showing you in a second, yes? So that particular machine, it's our one of our servers. Let me dig in. Okay. This is this particular machine, VS12R2DC. And whenever we go to certmgr.msc, let's dig in, and let's see if we are able to perform different kinds of activities with certificates. So let's go to the personal certificates, and then we've got this contoso.com certificate, and obviously the question is, are we able to export it? Well, next. Ah, okay. The private key was selected as not exportable by administrator generating the certificate. Sorry, yes, you're not able to get your own key. Well, not really this much, because whenever we are using this key, we know where is it, it's in the memory. So the question is, can we export it from the memory? Of course we can export it from the memory, because it's there. I mean, we are using it, so it's there, so we can grab it very easily, yes? So let's do that, blah, 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 next, that will never work. So let me take this buddy out. Of course, and now it's time, of course, to specify the name, WS12R2-DC. So this is my machine name. We can even put the domain secured.tech, and then dump, and here we've got, of course, either credentials, I mean, if you want to grab the clear text passwords, but it's not that funny anymore, or we can grab the certificates, yes? So these are the certificates, which is this option over here, yes? And now enter, and now we wait. Of course, what is really nice is that the PowerShell version of Mimikatz does not leave any kind of trace on the disk because it is running through the WinRAM that needs to be obviously enabled on the servers, but this is normally enabled on the servers, so WinRAM, and it is launching itself in the WinRM process. Yes, so it's really, really hard to spot that someone is doing this unless you do have a proactive monitoring and monitoring, of course, what is happening within the WinRM process when this is happening. So this is like really hard to investigate. And now what we've got, of course, all of the certificates. So these are in the tools folder, in my case, on the desktop. And all of these bodies over here are here. Yes, so one of the things that we've got, it is, well, as you see, PFX, yes? So this is this body over here, and this is the Contoso PFX, so this is the guy with the exportable, we hope, private key, yes, private key extension. And now I'm gonna do, I'm gonna actually copy it to the tools locally. So I have just copied this certificate over here. This is my tools folder on the desk, on my personal computer. And the last thing that I will do, I will simply dig in and basically extract the private key from this particular, well, certificate, yes? So I have here open console, and let me go to my tools. And I'm gonna use a tool that maybe you know, it's called OpenSSL, yes? It is used to manage also certificates. So basically, OpenSSL allows me to, first of all, I need to specify the standard, so PKCS12. Of the certain certificate. And the next thing, I need to specify the password. So password, and it's like, so what's the password? Well, luckily, because it was in the memory, it wasn't passworded. It was used in the memory, so we just grabbed it. And what the Mimikatz did, it added it to its own password. So pass, and then Mimikatz. As simple as this. Key was in the memory. I mean, it's just a matter of, and maybe we should put the password on it so that nobody steals it very easily. But who does this knows that the password will be, of course, set up with the Mimikatz. Let's dig in. So we've got the Mimikatz. And then, of course, we need to specify the name of the certificate. So this is our certificate. This PFX, of course, it means that the private key is there. And the public key, obviously, as well, with the corresponding private key. And then we're going to use the parameter clcerts to display us the details of what we've got inside this particular certificate. And then a couple of other switches like nodes, to be able, of course, to extract the keys from the certain certificate. Let's dig in. And what do we have? Not exportable private key. I mean, it's really funny. It's like, you cannot do that. Ask your administrator. But I am the DEM administrator, right? Who says we cannot do things in operating system? A lot of different kinds of mechanisms, of course, but just because we've got this operating system, and we can always elevate to local system if needed, we can do whatever we want. It's just the messages that we are seeing around. The private key is not exportable. Oh, really? Who says so? Administrator, ah, okay, then let's export it, yes? So it's a little bit like that. Okay, guys. So, having this in mind, yes? This was, of course, the live memory analysis, and we were able to export the certificates from the memory. And I'm sure that with this whole approach and the whole, of course, memory, extremely big subject, I mean, I hope that you could see that we could be really sitting here for hours and talking about what else we can find in the memory, because it's always about that, this and that and this. If you want to extract the whole event logs, here we go. If you want to extract what people saw when you were making memory dumps, so the pictures, here we go. If you want to, for example, extract the history of the command lines ever given in this operating system from the beginning of the reboot, here we go, yes? So there's a plenty of things that we can do. Everything at the beginning can be done with two, or actually three things. One, make yourself the memory dump. You know how to do that. It's pretty easy, right? Second, download volatility. But my suggestion, you will see that there is a volatility for Windows, so-called, and it has the form of executable. It's good for the beginning. But if you want to expand and use, for example, some special modules, you need to use the Python version. So I would suggest don't use the executable. Use the Python immediately and learn how to work with Python if you have not done it yet. So two things, make a memory dump, download Volatility, yes? And obviously download Python if you are about to use it, because memory analysis, even if it's like big, the start, it's very easy, and everybody can start doing this. And of course, remember that sharing the memory dump with someone, it's not the best idea in the world. And rather do not do that. Ask for the memory dumps, oh yes, but never give yours. Because remember that not only certificates can be found over there, but also your clear text passwords and a couple of other things that you have currently launched and you are working on, like Outlook, yes, like PST file, all is loaded in the memory. So you don't want to give emails to someone else, right? So this is basically the memory analysis session. Thank you so much, and hope you got your tiny point that you can take home with you. Thank you.